Hey everyone, welcome to episode 73 of Sifts and Giggles. I am your host Casey, and I am here as usual with Krista. How you doing, Krista?
Well, you caught me in poor time, and I'm just eating the last bite of my toast. I'm okay, I suppose.
I am eating dry Honey Nut Cheerios, so okay. Toast is one of my favorite snacks. My daily snack is toast with a banana and peanut butter.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. You really can't go wrong with it.
No.
Highly recommend getting like cinnamon bread and going peanut butter. That's always a great combo.
See, I would think that I could even do the bread without the peanut butter if it's cinnamon butter or cinnamon bread.
Still feel like it needs a little something, otherwise, I mean, it's toast, it's kind of dry.
I mean, I've never had cinnamon toast, so I'm just going completely off my imagination.
And yet you went to the grocery store with me when I bought it, because I have had zero motivation over the last couple of months, and Casey is a good friend and accompanied me to the grocery store, because my depressed ass didn't want to go alone.
And then me being the most unobservant person you know didn't realize you bought cinnamon toast and didn't even like know to ask for it before I left that day.
I think my favorite, like, I guess admission or thing to come out of our trip to the grocery store is Casey has admitted, and mind you, I'm like 5'6". How tall are you, Casey?
I am also 5'6", but I think you're either I'm shorter than 5'6", which I'm not going to accept, or you're a little taller than 5'6".
Perhaps. It's been a long time since I have been properly measured. but was Casey's admission to me after the fact that he had to, like, speed walk, like, a little bit run to keep up with me at times, that he couldn't understand it?
You were, like, trucking, and yeah, I was running, and there was one point where, like, this is so embarrassing, but, like, there was one point where I didn't say it out loud, but I was thinking to myself,
slow down,
my legs are short.
See, the sad thing is, like, to me, I feel like I wasn't even, like, walking that fast. Like, when I'm in stores, I am in and out. I do not want to be there any longer than I have to. And, I mean, that was pre-pandemic. So
it takes me 15 minutes to get in and out of Aldi when I go grocery shopping. So, like, I feel you there.
Like a maze. I don't like it. I don't like when it's being treated like cattle, which is weird because I absolutely love the arrows and aisles currently in the grocery store, but I think that's a little different than Aldi's weird maze where, like, as soon as you walk in, here's a whole bunch of things. Better hope you don't forget anything.
I know I'm, like, turning into an old man because, like, I get unreasonably pissed off when I go to a grocery store and they've completely rearranged it. And I don't know where anything is.
I'm kind of the same way, though. Like, once I know where something is, like, don't move it or you'll just make me mad.
Yeah. Okay, so now that we've gotten through the grocery shopping portion of our show, we're going to start talking some Star Wars. So we are continuing with Rebels Month by talking about Kanan and Ezra, but before we do that, we're going to spend a little time talking about this month's issue of the Star Wars Bane comic. So this was issue number 7 by Charles Soule, and this one was titled The Will of Tarkin, Part 1. Now, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this along with Kanan and Ezra this evening is that I think we get an interesting view of, like, a darker master and apprentice relationship versus, like, the master and apprentice relationship that we're going to see later on with Kanan and Ezra.
I also think not necessarily that it's, you know, a darker take on master and apprentice. It's also a non-force sensitive pairing.
Yes.
Like, the Force has no bearing whatsoever on this. This was a protege, as we find out in the comic, you know, that Tarkin took willingly and on his own volition. Which, I mean, I guess in a way is similar to Kanan and Ezra.
Yeah. Well, it was a competition. It was a three-person competition between Commander Zahra and two other people. And this was a callback to the Tarkin novel by, I think, I can't remember his first name. His last name is Lucino. His first name is escaping me. So in this book, on Tarkin's home planet, his family owns like this big, vast swath of land. And it's an area called the Carrion Plateau, which he named his flagship Carrion Spike after it. Now, the comic just says that, like, his family has hunted there for generations. But, like, in the book, what happens is that, like, a young teenage Tarkin, over the course of, like, two or three summers, is dropped in the middle of this land by himself and is basically told to spend the summer surviving off the land and hunting, like, these beasts. And if he dies, he dies. And if he doesn't die, he's worthy of being a Tarkin. So he takes these three people and he tells them that there is a beast that, unlike all the other ones, is an albino and it shouldn't have survived on its own out there, but over the years it has. It's become tough. And he wants them to bring him the head of this beast. And now Commander Zahra, being extra the way she is, not only kills the beast, but kills her two Imperial companions. Tarkin seems fine with that, but, like, I kind of wonder, like, if in the back of his head he's like, Jesus Christ, I just wanted you to kill the animal, not, like, two other people.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I like the point where she's kind of like, he's like, and the others, your colleagues. When I don't know about you, but, like, I read him saying that very, you know, in his stereotypical monotone Tarkin voice, where he just seems unfazed and unbothered. And then, you know, Zahra gives us a relatively long kind of monologue type thing. And I like how she says, for instance, here, I saw immediately that you sent us to hunt three quarries, not just the Vermok. The others took longer, but in the end, I helped them understand. When it came down to it, they were unworthy. So she's almost kind of like throwing it, like, I guess, Parkin's words back in his face. Like you said, like, if you succeed, this is worth, like, that. You're being tested on your worth. And they failed to get it after I killed it, so, like, they aren't worthy. And in her mind, that means, like, if you aren't worthy, you're dead.
And I can see him being okay with
switch
that.
Your ox cord.
Okay. And I can see Tarkin being okay with that because, like, at the end of the day, Tarkin is a ruthless bastard.
Yes.
He sends her off on a mission to hunt. He says it's a criminal. I don't know if it's actually just, like, a rebel spy or if it's actually a criminal. And he says, like, bring me his head. And she thinks that, like, that's a figurative thing because she comes back and she's like, I killed the guy. And he's like, well, where's the head? Like, if you didn't bring me the head, you failed the mission. That was the mission. Mm-hmm. And, like, that was enough to, like, get her out of his good graces.
Yes. I do say, I, like, we had the one little, like, split cameo of Tarkin bragging about her to Vader, essentially. And I got a kick out of Vader referring to her as his little foundling.
Yeah, I'd like that, too. I did really like that. And right before that, there's a panel where she is interrogating a member of the rebellion. Are we supposed to know who that is? Do you know? Have any idea?
No, I have absolutely no clue. Although part of me, and I could be, I mean, I guess it depends ultimately what point in time this is. Kind of looks a little bit like Agent Callus. I doubt it's him, but like a little bit.
I can see that, like the comic book version of Agent Callus, like not the animated version of him. Yeah, I can definitely see that.
But I just don't understand in what context that would be a thing that is happening. Because, I mean, we know at the end of Rebels. But again, that's the end of Rebels. That shows us him going to. Why can't I remember the planet's name?
Lothal.
Nope. Imploded Star Cluster Planet. Lirasan.
Yeah.
Where in the fifth, the time jump at the end, like in the epilogue. Essentially, he is off to Lirasan with his boyfriend. I mean, I'm sorry, Zeb. Off to Lirasan. So I guess you could feasibly imagine that at some point in time he possibly could be getting interrogated by Tarkin.
I also like in the panel before that. See, we're just working backwards now.
Yeah, there's no real rhyme or reason to discussing this topic right now. I mean, this right now.
there's some good shit talking between Krennic and Tarkin.
Yeah, I did enjoy that little bit of Rogue One in there.
Yeah. So she fails to kill this criminal. And to get back in Tarkin's good graces, she decides to steal a Imperial shuttle off of the Death Star. And just as she's like sending a message to Tarkin saying, like, I'm going to show you that I was worthy of your trust and your time, the Death Star blows up. And
Real quick, I thought it was really neat. It's almost like her, like the Empire's arrogance is coming back to bite them in the ass here. Because when she goes to take the ship, hang on, I'm getting to the panel real quick. When she goes to take the ship, there's a trooper, saying, do you have authorization? I need your authorization. And she's like, no, I'm a lieutenant commander. Like, that is my authorization. And he's like, but don't you realize we're under attack? And she's like, she's like, ha, this is a Death Star. Nothing can defeat us. So she's kind of cocky. She attacks the stormtrooper and steals the ship that is being used to. In preparation for evacuating high-ranking officers such as
Tarkin.
Tarkin. I love these panels of like the Death Star, like the panel of the Death Star blowing up and like her shuttle and everything kind of just like just making it through it just in time are stunning.
Yeah, and you can see like there's a little bit of damage done to her ship, and she's bleeding in one of the panels. So, like, yeah, that's pretty incredible. So that's like the little backstory on her, and we learn that why she is so hell-bent on destroying the rebellion and Princess Leia in particular. Overall, like, what did you think of the story in this issue?
It was not at all what I expected. I enjoyed it, but like the way it was setting up, I was expecting, more from the rebellion's perspective. I guess specifically from Leia's perspective. So I was kind of taken back by that, but now part of me wants. Like based on the teaser image that's showing for the next issue, it doesn't look like it'll be straying from Zahara's point of view.
I thought it
But
was
I
a nice little change of pace after like the first six issues of following Luke around.
yeah, I guess I just kind of wanted the change of pace to be following Leia around. Don't get me wrong, like it's awesome to see, like, I mean Zara is a badass woman in the Imperial Navy.
Well, I mean, I'm sure we're going to get that because she's hunting Leia, And we know Leia doesn't die, so...
Oh, yes.
We're probably going to get some Leia badassery.
Oh, fantastic. That's all I ask for. Doesn't take to please me, but Leia badassery does it.
All right, so we're going to move on from one story of a master and apprentice, so to speak, into another master and apprentice story. Now, okay, so talking about Kanan and Ezra, juxtapose this against like the first six issues of the main Star Wars comic where Luke is desperately trying to find a master to teach him the ways of the Force. And now we're talking about Kanan and Ezra, who Ezra has his master. And it's a great relationship. I would say I even like this relationship more than like Obi-Wan and Anakin.
See, and I don't want this to be taken negatively or like me trashing it, because that's not the case at all. For me, it is kind of very similar in a way to Anakin and Obi-Wan, in the sense that, you know, you have a master who is not entirely sure about being a master and training, you know, a Padawan and everything. You have the Padawan who is a little bit old to be getting into it, who has issues with attachment and love and, you know, caring for his family and whatnot a ton, to the point where it can kind of push him to the dark side. I guess in the later seasons, it definitely does divert more and it becomes their own relationship. But I think in the beginning, it's very much almost like a, not, I don't want to say a B-rate, but like a B-rate Obi-Wan Anakin.
It's kind of like, it's an Obi-Wan and Anakin story if you weren't burdened from the very beginning with the knowledge that like Anakin's going to turn to the dark side.
Yeah.
And it's like, and Ezra is Anakin if Anakin had learned to like let go.
Yes.
Like Ezra, and you're right, Ezra has his attachments to his family, like his real family, his blood family, and his ghost family, because they're both real families. I don't want to like have anyone misunderstand that.
100%.
But he learns how to like, he learns how to manage those attachments, and he learns how to save the people he loves by letting go. And I enjoy that. I think that's a good story and a good lesson to like give people.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I also think it kind of shows you just how much Kanan's probably death ultimately, like how much of a part his death ultimately played in, you know, probably defining Ezra as a light side user.
I can see that. But of course, Kanan's death isn't where he learns to let go. He's going to figure that out a couple episodes later in the World Between Worlds. And it's a hard lesson for him to learn. And if it's not one that he learns on his own, he needs Ahsoka to teach him that. And just like imagine if Ezra had found the door to Kanan before he found the door to Ahsoka.
Oh, God. And to kind of build off of that, like in regards to like, you know, that lesson he learned from Kanan ultimately, this was from an article on StarWars.com back in July 27th, 2018, titled Always 2, Building a Jedi Legacy with Ezra and Kanan. Which is basically them examining the pairing of the two. But in it, they mention that Kanan teaches Ezra to be more forward and proactive in his actions, which is, you know, a sign of maturity and growth in Ezra as we see him, you know, embrace those traits and then become a part of him. And then it says that Kanan's tragic death reinforces that lesson, with both the Jedi himself and Ahsoka Tano telling Ezra what he needs to let go of his desire, that he needs to let go of his desire to save Kanan. Kanan dies a hero, protecting his entire crew after battling through the Imperial Depot with Hera. He has come a long way from when he hesitated to use a lightsaber against the Empire, preferring to hide his identity. This scene parallels the first time he emerged out of hiding in front of the Empire, when he assembled his lightsaber to save the Wookiee captives in the series premiere. Only now, when Kanan demonstrates his power, it's as public as it can be, on top of an explosive fuel tank, in full view of his crew and Empire. At the end, Kanan becomes a beacon of light by which Ezra can see the way on his own Jedi journey.
Okay, thank you for making me cry on the podcast.
Oh, goddamn.
No, you're right. And I never thought about it in those terms. I never thought about just how far Kanan comes as a Jedi. And yeah, the article was right. When we meet him, he's hiding, and he's like the very definition of a reluctant hero. And then he, in the end, he dies saying, "Here I am, this is me, and this is what I stand for."
Yeah. I think a lot of it, too, is and we kind of see it throughout the show a lot more. So it's like Kanan throughout the show is always kind of a little bit more reluctant to get involved with the rebels and
go to bed
with, you know, fighting the Empire on a face-to-face basis, where it's very, like, you know, he can't be discreet or in the shadows more. Because I think, like, you know, and the article kind of also mentions, like, his opinion is that, like, the proof of success is in survival. And his, for him, survival meant hiding that he was a Jedi. And I think it's kind of neat to see him finally reach the point where, you know, he's like, "I'm not going to survive this, but, you know, if I finally reveal who, like, I truly am, perhaps that'll allow others to survive. And that survival was more important than the survival of my own existence."
And he passes that lesson on to Ezra beautifully, because that's basically how his story in Rebels ends. Like, the survival of the Ghost crew and the people of Lothal is so important to him that he, you know, he turns himself over to Thrawn and sets it up for the Purrgils to come in and basically, you know, carry them away via a hyperspace lane. And that's a sacrifice on his part, because he doesn't know if he's going to survive that. Like, as far as Ezra knows, like, that might be, like, the final sacrifice he's ever going to make, but it's worth it because it saves everyone.
The survival of the many in lieu of the one, essentially.
Yeah, and that is, I think that's an interesting way to look at it, because, like, I think there is a light side version of that and there is a dark side version of that. And, like, the dark side version might be, like, I'm going to save everyone by sacrificing you. And the light side version of that is, I'm going to save everyone by sacrificing me.
Yeah. Holy shit, I just read something.
Okay.
Okay. Same article. To preface this, it starts talking about, you know, Ezra's relationship to the animals and the planet of Lothal. And how he is, like, used to paying attention to them. He lets them lead him places and things like that. And it mentions, you know, Kanan is the opposite of that. He's, you know, suspicious at first when he meets the Loth Wolves. But once they, you know, mutter the name Doom, he's hooked at that point. Like, what else can he do other than go along? And it kind of debates, like, you know, does he have a mystical bond with the wolf, such as the daughter with the Morai, Ahsoka's Convor? Has he become part of the environment of Lothal, the very place Ezra is trying to protect? But it says, perhaps when he dies, Kanan is reunited with his former name, the name the planet has been calling him. Like the Jedi, the wolves are a symbol of hope. Ezra learned from the wolves just as he learned from Kanan. Kanan's death allows Caleb Doom to do what he could not do for the Jedi Order, to save the people he loves and do meaningful damage against the Empire. However, the lesson Ezra learns here may not be the same one. It may have been in the Jedi Order of the Old Republic, the order in which Yoda cautions Anakin against the attachment. The Force on Lothal permits Ezra one last glimpse at the Loth Wolves, reminding him that although he should not cling to his grief, he is permitted a final fond look and a moment to mourn. Although they did not have a Jedi Order to guide them, Kanan and Ezra still have the Force, and in some of its most powerful and most mysterious manifestations, and each other.
Okay, so go back a few sentences. Is the article saying that the Force was telling Kanan that, like, this isn't who you are, you're not Kanan, you're Caleb Doom?
Yeah, it's kind of arguing in a sense that, you know, when he dies, he's reunited with his name. And the entire time, the planet has been trying to tell him that this is who you are, not, you know, Kanan Jarrus, but Caleb Doom. It's like the Force's way of calling him home. I guess how I'm interpreting it.
Wow.
Like, kind of, I guess, in a way telling him, like, you can never truly be the Jedi and the Jedi Master you wish to be until you come to terms and accept the fact that you are Caleb Doom.
That's incredible. Who wrote this article?
Let me see. I'm not seeing a title. At the bottom, it does say... So, okay. I think it might have been written by Megan Kruse. Kruse. She's appeared in Den of Geek, Fangirl Blog, Star Wars Insider.
I'll come talk to you later.
At the time of the writing this article, she was on the podcasts Western Reaches, Blaster Cannon, and her Twitter at this time of writing was at blog full of words.
Huh. I'm not familiar with her. I'm going to see if she's still on
Neither
Twitter.
Am I. But that article, I found it today, and I was like, damn, this is perfect.
Okay, this is embarrassing. I actually follow her on Twitter.
Wow. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't think she must, maybe she doesn't tweet a lot, because.
Oh, shit, I'm an idiot. It did say by Megan Kruse all the way at the top right-hand corner, but because I'm blind, I had the article zoomed in on my iPad screen.
Okay, can we agree? Okay, you're not an idiot for missing that name. I'm not an idiot for following her this whole time and not knowing it. So,
excellent. I like this.
Yeah, we're both good. No, that is some incredible analysis by her.
Oh, for sure.
Can you text that to me when we when I put the article, when I put this episode out on Monday, I want to give a shout out to her.
Boom, there you go. Thank you. On an unrelated note, because I don't know, do we have much more to talk about right now with Kanan and Ezra?
Okay.
I said, do we have much more?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said on an unrelated note. I thought you were going to say something.
No, I was going to ask if you had much more to, because I don't have anything else to add.
There is.
I didn't know if you did.
There is something I want to point out.
Then by all means,
it's not like
fire away.
It's not relevant to anything we've talked about so far, but I want to point out that in a roundabout way, Kanan is responsible for saving all of the Jedi who survived Order 66. Because Obi-Wan was giving a group of Padawans a lesson. And Kanan had a ton of questions about holocrons and how holocrons can be used to store information and to like convey like messages. And Kanan gave Obi-Wan the idea of sending a message out to all the Jedi from the temple via holocrons. So because of Kanan and all of his questions, Obi-Wan followed through on the idea to send a message to all of the remaining Jedi to avoid Coruscant, to avoid the Jedi Temple. So kind of the Force putting Kanan at the right place at the right time with the right person.
That's an excellent point as well. I had never noticed that.
Yeah, that was from the book A New Dawn, which like happens in like the first chapter. So it's not like it happened. Matter of fact, it happens in like the prologue. So like it's not a major spoiler. But yeah, so like Kanan is responsible for that.
So I found a quiz.
Okay.
Found two quizzes. That okay. I'm curious if you're interested to do. Both of them are on the Star Wars website, so if you also want to do them, you can. Oh, but I feel like we'll kind of spoil it unless they auto-generate additional questions. The first one, Katie, is can you guess the Jedi from the three random clues?
Okay.
This first one's a bit of a softball, if you would. Hates sand. Loves too old to train.
What was the first one? Was the second one loves Padme?
Yeah, so hates sand, loves Padme, too old to train.
Yeah, Anakin.
Yes, obviously. Okay, question two. Swamp Hermit, backpack, dislikes judgment.
Say the first one again?
Swamp Hermit.
Yoda?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Oh, God. This is another easy one, but it's fitting. Pad one of Depa. Ponytail. Spectre one.
Oh, Kanan. That's fitting.
Yep. All righty. Here we go. Corrupted on Mortis. Falsely accused. Snippy.
We talked about her last week, Ahsoka Tano.
That is correct. Okay. Skilled pilot. No hand holding. No longer waiting.
Skilled pilot, no hand holding.
No longer waiting.
Luke?
Rey.
Oh, because she keeps saying, quit holding my hand.
I'm waiting for my family. On top
of that. This is like so, this is so terrible of me, but like as soon as like, when you said skilled pilot and no hand holding, I thought, well, Luke loses a hand, so you're That's not true. Holding his hand. God, I'm terrible. All
right, ready? Yeah. X-Wing pilot, Jedi Master, still needs power converters.
Luke.
Yep. All right, Dorian native, wears a mask, betrayed.
Dorian native, wears a mask, betrayed. I don't know if Legends counts, but is that Revan?
The answer is Plo Koon.
Oh, okay. I didn't know where he was from. I don't know what Dorian is.
Purple Blade. Done partying. Believes in peace.
Mace motherfucking Windu.
That is motherfucking correct.
Did you know that he has badass motherfucker on his lightsaber?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I love how he wanted a purple lightsaber only so he could easily pick himself out in the movie.
Yes.
And this is terrible to say, but honestly, it wouldn't have been that hard because he's like the only black guy in it too, which is terrible.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Which is terrible. Representation was a massive issue in those early films. Okay, number 9. Responsible clone commander has the high ground.
Obi-Wan.
That is correct. Okay, Salvager. On a quest, droid sidekick.
Well, Rey was already an answer. I can't think of another Jedi who's a salvager.
Expand from the movies a little bit.
Expand from the movies a little bit? Oh, crap. His name from Fallen Order. Cal Kestis.
I don't remember what his name is.
Cal Kestis.
Thank you. That is correct. I just couldn't remember what his name is, but I knew that that's who it was. Okay. Focused. Counter of midichlorians. Leaves nothing to chance.
Qui-Gon?
Yep. Last one. Born on Empire Day. Connects with animals. Wields lightsaber / blaster.
Ezra.
That is correct. Okay. And then the last other one, if you're up for it.
Yes, absolutely.
Is. I gotta scroll back to it. Sorry. Guess the Star Wars movie from the quote.
Okay. I've got a bad feeling about this better not be one of the quotes.
That's in every film. Okay, number 1. The Force can have a strong influence on the weak-minded. I'm just going to say it. Okay, so A New Hope, Phantom Menace, Revenge of the Sith, or The Last Jedi?
A New Hope.
Correct. Always remember, your focus determines your reality. Empire Strikes Back, Phantom Menace, Force Awakens, Rogue One.
Always remember, your focus determines your reality?
Yes.
Phantom Menace?
That is correct. They fly now. Attack of the Clones, Rise of Skywalker, Rogue One, or Solo?
Rise of Skywalker.
Correct. I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old. A New Hope, Rise of Skywalker, Rogue One, Solo.
Rogue One, said by one of the most underrated characters of Star Wars, Cassian Andor.
Correct. Number five is a bit of a freebie. I don't like sand. I'm not even going to read the options.
Attack of the Clones.
Correct.
One of my favorite Anakin memes that come from that quote is when, like, in Rise of Skywalker, Rey is burying the lightsabers in the sand, and then, like, Anakin's Force ghost appears, and he's like, take it out, the sand, take it out of the sand, now.
Oh, incredible. It's like, that's really his lightsaber that's being buried. Okay, number six. Listen, big deal. You've got another problem. Women always figure out the truth. Always. Return of the Jedi, Phantom Menace, Force Awakens, Rogue One.
Force Awakens.
Correct. Now, young Skywalker, you will die. Return of the Jedi, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, Rise of Skywalker.
Return of the Jedi.
I've got a really good feeling about this. Return of the Jedi, Force Awakens, Last Jedi, or Solo?
Solo.
Correct. So far, you have not missed a single one.
I'm good with quotes.
It's time for the Jedi to end. A New Hope, Revenge of the Sith, The Force Awakens, Last Jedi.
Last Jedi.
Correct. No. There is another. A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Revenge of the Sith.
Empire Strikes Back.
Correct. Everything you've heard about me is true. A New Hope, Revenge of the Sith, Rise of Skywalker, Solo.
Solo. Lando says it, right?
Yeah, Lando says it, yeah. You've never heard of the Millennium Falcon, A New Hope, Return of the Jedi, Force Awakens, Solo.
A New Hope.
Correct. Maybe someday you'll feel different. Empire Strikes Back, Attack of the Clones, Last Jedi, Solo.
The Last Jedi?
Wrong. It didn't tell me which one was right, so.
What?
Yeah, it didn't tell me. Maybe it'll tell me at the end. Perhaps. The garbage will do. A New Hope, Force Awakens, Last Jedi, Rogue One.
The Force Awakens.
Correct. No, I call it aggressive negotiations. A New Hope, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, Rise of Skywalker.
Attack of the Clones. Maybe someday you'll feel different was from Solo. Emphas Nest says it to Han after Han says that he doesn't want to be a part of a rebellion. And she says, maybe someday you'll feel different.
And we know he does feel different someday. All right, number 16. You'll find I'm full of surprises. Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, Attack of the Clones, Last Jedi.
Empire Strikes Back.
Correct. And I, am all the Jedi. Return of the Jedi, Revenge of the Sith, Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker.
And the dot, dot, dot is when she emphatically pushes the two lightsabers, blocking the lightning back at him.
First couple times I saw the movie, I couldn't help saying in my head, I am Iron Man.
Incredible. I find your lack of faith disturbing. A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Revenge of the Sith, Force Awakens.
A New Hope, which Hallmark has a Christmas ornament of Vader force choking Governor Tag, and it has the, or not Governor Tag, Admiral Tag, or General, I can't remember what he was. But he had the Christmas ornament of Vader force choking him, and it has the audio from that scene. And my wife said I can get it for the Christmas tree if I see it.
That's incredible. Rebellions are built on hope. A New Hope. Last Jedi. Rogue One. Solo.
It's my favorite quote from Rogue One.
Correct. You ever hear the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
Revenge of the Sith. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to give me the options.
No, because it was a no brainer. You got 19 out of 20 correct.
I'm happy. I did better on that than I did on the Guess the Jedi. We need to play Star Wars Trivial Pursuit
together. We really do.
Because then, like, your competitive nature can kick in, and my competitive nature with Star Wars can kick in, and then we could, like, see if our friendship survives this.
It'll be, like, the opposite of when we play FIFA.
You mean we'll when do... I go in knowing I'm going to lose, it's just a matter of how much am I going to lose by?
Yeah, that's basically how it'll be for me with Trivial Pursuit.
Can I tell everyone what happened last night?
By all means, knock yourself out.
So we're playing FIFA together. I am playing as Manchester City. I think you were playing as Dortmund. And
so I beat you with Dortmund by a ton.
Okay, then it wasn't Dortmund. I can't remember who.
I was AC Milan. No.
No, I think you were Real Madrid. Now, to put this in context, Krista and I have probably played a double-digit amount of games at this point. I have never beat Krista at soccer. I've drawn a couple of games against her. I've never beat her. You
can count on one hand the number of times you've drawn as well.
Yes. I think it's been like twice. So we're playing this game, and I score a goal, and I go up 1-0 against her. And then I score another goal, and I'm like up 2-0 against her. And then we come to halftime. And like at this point, like I felt like I won the game. Just like getting through a half of soccer beating you was enough to like make me feel very proud of myself.
Mind you, I had told Casey as this was happening because he was like over the moon. And I was like, yeah, you're playing really well. I was like, but I'm also going to be completely honest. Like, my sleeping pills have kicked in and I'm struggling to keep my eyes open.
As soon as she says her sleeping pills kick in, boom, one goal. Boom, a second fucking goal. And she drew against me again. I just, oh my God. I was like, are you kidding me?
I told you about the sleeping pills during the first half.
Did you, Tim? I thought it was the second half.
No, it was the first half. And I didn't score those two goals until there was like 20 minutes left in the game.
And I'm like, I'm sitting there, I'm not saying anything, but I'm sitting there and I'm thinking sleeping pills my fucking ass.
But the funniest thing is though, but like I literally, like at that point I was like so tired, but I was like, on principle, I cannot lose this game. I do not care how tired I am. And I was just, no, I was AC Milan because I scored both goals with Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
I love how, like,
he just muscled off, like, four of your defenders and walked into the box.
I love how, like, you're beating me, like, 5-1 in some games. And, like, as you're beating me, like, 5-1, you're like, oh, I really hope you don't mind I'm running the score up against you.
Yeah. But it's, like, because I genuinely, like, I'm not trying to. Like, I think, I don't know, maybe if you notice, like, after I score two or three, I, like, do a fuck ton of passes and dribbles and, like, try outrageous shots just to, like, not run up the score.
I'm going to beat you one day, and it's going to happen soon.
One day, if you do, more credit to you, but know that once you do, I probably will never let you beat me again. I will make it a personal mission to never lose again.
Well, okay, if it's gonna be the one and only time, I hope it happens on a day when we're hanging out so I can see the look on your face when I beat you.
Oh, I don't think you do, because I'll probably be in a bad mood. I take my FIFA seriously.
All right. Do we have any more Star Wars related things to talk about?
I don't think so.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. You can follow me on hockey at, or you can follow me on Twitter at Darth Hockey. You can follow Krista at.
I'm also on Twitter at Critter, K-R-I, 3 T's, E, 3 R's.
Follow the podcast at Sith's Giggles Pod. We are still doing the Star Wars 30-Day Challenge, Star Wars Rebels 30-Day Challenge. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Spreaker.com. Thank you for listening. Bye.